Hi, everybody. My name is Daniel.
Before we begin taping today, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Peter Jenks of the Federal Communications Commission. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Barris. I don't know if any of you are aware of this, but it's a federal offense to make lascivious remarks on a television network broadcast. The penalty for this disgusting un-American behavior is 1 year in prison, or a $10,000 fine, or both. Anyone making a sick, submersive remark tonight will be arrested immediately. I then will personally escort the offender to federal prison for booking under Edict Number 364 of the Broadcasting Act of 1963. And it's a long drive to that prison, baby. Just you and me. No witnesses.
Okay, have fun, everybody. All right.
This is Darian Sahanaja of the band known as Wonderments, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC Accra.
WGXC welcomes audio responses and feedback from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message, and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-622-2598 and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. That number again is 518-622-2598. 622-2598.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more, plus advance notice of close-up series conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Saugerties, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org. That's upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Nick and Lisa in Palinville, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Well, good evening, and welcome to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Amanda.
Dim the Lights is a twice a month, every second and fourth Tuesday of the month, to be exact, radio movie talk show. It's a hot one.
It's so hot outside.
Jenny and I are particularly heat sensitive. We will explore this when we talk about our theme
in a little bit.
But before we get into that, as always, we're going to tell you a little bit about what's playing in the theaters around these parts. And I'm going to start by telling you about what's at the Greenville Drive-In, otherwise known as Drive-In 32 in Greenville, New York. We have, we missed Jaws on July 5th and 6th.
Oh, perfect time for it.
But this weekend on July 12th and 13th is Galaxy Quest, an excellent movie. And July 16th is The Incredibles. July 19th and 20th, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. July 23rd, Big Hero 6. July 26th is a Taylor Swift karaoke night hosted by yourself. Me.
Oh my God.
Myself. yours truly. That's what I meant to say. July 27th, we have Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? July 30th, we have Finding Nemo. And that's all we have for the July calendar so far at Drive-In 32, otherwise known as the Greenville Drive-In. You can find out more by going to drivein32.com.
Wow, that's so exciting.
Oh,
hello.
Oh.
Can you hear me?
Oh. Hello. Hold on.
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
Oh, now. Oh, I wasn't going in directly. Now I'm here. All right. So now I'm going to tell you, with a dramatic pause, about what's playing at the Crandall Theater over in Chatham. We have Thelma. And then coming soon, it's The Bike Riders, Kinds of Kindness, Green Border, Horizon, and then Cat Video Fest, as well as their summer movie series. They have a ton of really cool, fun movies coming this summer. Lots of classics, which look really exciting, including Minions, Emma, Dirty Dancing, etc. Mm-hmm. All kinds of things. Their calendar is, as always, incredibly chock-a-block full and a little complex. And so what I would strongly recommend to you is to head over to the CrandallTheater.org URL in order to see what their calendar looks like. And that's the Crandall Theater in Chatham, which is just one of our wonderful classic theaters in the area.
It is. Thank you so much. All right, I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Highway Drive-In in Coxsackie right off of 9W. They are now, they just announced they're going to be open
five days. Yeah.
So Wednesday through Sunday, they're going to be open. But for right now, I think I can't remember when they said they're going to start, when that's going to kick off. But we have, this is a 4-screen theater and each screen is a double feature. So on screen one, we have Despicable Me 4 and The Fall Guy. Screen two is Inside Out 2 and the Garfield movie. Screen three is Maxine and Pearl. And screen four is A Quiet Place Day One and the Bike Riders. Find out more by heading to highwaydrivein.com. That's HIWAYdrivein.com.
All right. Now I'm going to tell you about what's playing at Upstate Films, starting with the Star Cinema, which is the location in Rhinebeck. We have Thelma, Janet Planet, and Kinds of Kindness. And then heading on over to the Orpheum Theater, which is the Upstate location in Saugerties, we have Maxine, Despicable Me 4, and Inside Out 2. There are also some special events coming up, including the Isle of Dogs screening at the Hudson Valley Picture Show in Kinderhook, as well as it's sold out. But if you're one of the lucky people who got a ticket ahead of time, there's a special screening of Burn After Reading with Frances McDormand happening next week.
Wow.
So never forget to check out the Upstate Films website at upstatefilms.org to find out about these cool events that you could be getting tickets to.
Don't be a fool and miss the opportunities that they give.
They've done some really cool ones this year. They did After Hours with Griffin Dunn,
yeah,
which is so fun.
Didn't they do one with Brad Dourif too?
Yes. Oh my God. Well, I can't remember what movie it was, but yes, Brad Dourif was also a guest at Upstate Films. So exciting. We're so lucky.
I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Spotlight Theater in Hudson. That is the one with 8 screens on Fairview Avenue. We have Maxine, Sound of Hope, The Story of the Possum Trot.
Mm.
No idea.
Fascinating.
And yeah, I've never heard of it. Very fascinating. Despicable Me 4, A Quiet Place Day 1, The Bike Riders, Inside Out 2, Bad Boys Ride or Die.
Nice.
So that's everything at the Spotlight Theater in Hudson. Check it out at thespotlighttheaters.com and select the Hudson location from the drop-down menu.
All right. The last theater I'm going to tell you about is TSL, otherwise known as Time and Space Limited. And I'm going to be honest with you, their website's not working. But I can tell you about what's playing today, and that might be emblematic about what's coming up.
Yeah.
Today we have Le Bonheur, The Beaches of Agnes, Green Border, and Cleo from 5 to 7. And then the other thing that they have listed on, I'm looking at their Instagram, is next Sunday, or this upcoming Sunday, July 14th, is a documentary screening called The Figures, an abstract on Jeffrey Young. And if you're interested in any of these or hopefully future showtimes, usually their showtimes are listed at timeandspace.org, or you can find their calendars kind of all over town if you're looking. And that's, once again, that's TSL in Hudson.
Amazing. All right. Last but not least is the other movie theater on Fairview Avenue, Story Screen Cinema. So right now we have Maxine, A Quiet Place Day One, Kinds of Kindness, and Janet Planet. We got a lot of exciting stuff coming soon, too, including Twisters.
Yes.
So keep an eye out for what's playing now and coming soon to Story Screen Cinema by going to StoryScreenPresents.com.
Wow. Gorgeous. I still got to head over to that one.
I know. I still haven't been there either. Also upcoming is that movie that's been teased to me very, very much on social media. Long legs.
The words on everybody's lips.
The long legs.
I'm trying to not hype myself up too much for it because I feel like the marketing is trying to get me to believe the scariest movie ever made. And I know if I go in expecting that, I'm going to be disappointed.
I know. And in fact, because so often, like with Skinamarink, often when the hype is really big, it almost makes me lower my expectations more than I normally would.
Yeah, totally. So in some ways, they're actually doing great work by making me be like, this is crazy.
But yeah, they keep doing, I'm sure you're getting the same ad where it's like actress Mika Mintz, or is that her name?
It's Micah Monroe.
I don't know.
I love her. She's the same actress from It Follows.
Yes.
I have like a huge crush on her. Yeah, I would watch anything that she's in.
But they're like, Micah Monroe's heart rate when she first saw Nicolas Cage as Longlegs doubled its beats per minute.
Like, it's just because she's a really good actor, you guys.
Exactly.
She's just like a really good actor.
She's supposed to be nervous in that scene.
Yeah, that's
probably
like the whole point. Yeah. Come on, be for real. Mika Mintz.
I think that's actually one of my friends that I don't really know.
That's a really good name.
Yeah, I know. It's a really cool name. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's a person that I've met maybe once or never.
Mika Mintz.
But I see on Instagram stories.
Wow, happy for them.
So, as mentioned, today is a hot day, you don't know if you're not listening locally. It is very hot. The air is thick outside. What is it? My partner sent me a description that a meteorologist in New York City said. They're like, it's, warm, soupy, humid air mass is what we're living in right now.
Wow, that is absolutely correct.
Yep. So, in honor of this absolutely disgusting weather that's very, very hard for Jenny and I, our theme for tonight is, so Jenny and I pick a theme for each show and we watch movies around that show and then we get the airwaves to talk about them. And tonight's theme is heat wave. We sure are living in one. I unfortunately was only able to get in one movie for this, but it was really long. So
Perfect. It
kind of works out for Easy. Two. And when we first picked this theme, I thought, okay, it's a really fun time to watch all of those Australian new wave movies that I love and or haven't seen, like Walkabout, which I think I've seen when I was a kid. But and then somebody brought up a good point where it's like, well, that's just the general state all the time of Australia.
That's true.
Like maybe
most
of
their cinema is heat wave.
Exactly.
Based.
So I tried to watch movies that were where the heat is kind of abnormal and adding to the behavior of humans.
Perhaps the heat is a character in the
Ooh,
film.
I wish it was more.
Oh man,
watched,
yeah. Same.
I want to hear first about one of the movies that you watched.
All right. I got two movies in, luckily. Yes. Lucky for me. I kind of forgot about one of them and then I was like, oh yeah, I did watch that for this.
Yeah.
Completely. So the first movie that I watched is a movie from 1993. Called Falling Down.
Oh my God. That was on my list. I love that movie. I hadn't seen it in a while, so I was going to watch it anyways.
Perfect.
Wow. Falling Down is a great movie.
It's really good. It's directed by Joel Schumacher, which is such a like fun left turn from
him. Yeah.
I had never seen it. I think I like kind of had a conception of it in my head, but didn't really know what it was called or anything about it. But I said to my partner, our theme this week is heat wave. And he was like, I got you. And just put Falling Down on immediately.
So good.
Like did not ask, just put it on.
It's a perfect one.
It's great. So for those of you who are not familiar, like I said, it's from 1993, directed by Joel Schumacher. Famously known for directing a lot of the Batman movies from the 90s.
Yeah, the
Batman and Robin.
Yeah, Batman and Robin. Yeah. And the one with the freeze man.
Yeah, Batman Returns, I think is that one. Maybe. Batman Forever.
Batman Forever. Batman Returns is the Catwoman one. Yes, you're right. The Tim Burton one.
The Tim Burton one. So sorry. So, in Falling Down, our main character is played by Michael Douglas, who has the world's worst crew cut. He looks so scary for a man who's otherwise usually pretty handsome.
It's not a sexy crew cut.
No, he's got a really scary crew cut.
It's high and tight, and his character's high and tight.
So high, so tight. So this is an incredibly hot day in Los Angeles, and he is stuck in an insane traffic jam. There's blinking lights everywhere. There's children crying. There's people singing. There's people yelling. People are playing loud music in their cars. And he's had enough. He, while stuck in this traffic jam, simply gets out of his car and walks away. You think it's initially going to be a movie about road rage, but actually it's just a movie about Michael Douglas losing his entire mind.
Just rage.
Full rage. No road about it. And so he proceeds to go on what is essentially like a crime spree where he's at his wit's end and every single person he interacts with has to pay for it.
Yeah.
But it's a really fun kind of double-sided movie where there's another protagonist who is a police detective who it's his last day on the job. He's about to retire and all of his colleagues who are cops are all really mean to him because he stays out of the field mostly. He's pretty much like a desk cop because his wife is really scared of him getting hurt after their daughter was killed when she was very young. So everyone really gives him a hard time, but it turns out he's actually like a really good detective. And he starts noticing all of the different things that Michael Douglas is doing by like connecting all of these different crimes that are happening throughout the city and the pattern that it's creating. And so we have this kind of dual narrative of like Michael Douglas absolutely losing his mind and like thinking that he's the righteous person in it because he is complaining about things that are real, but also he's hurting the people who are not responsible for it.
Yeah.
Except for one notable exception in which he does attack a person who is a Nazi.
Yeah, he does beat up some neo-Nazis.
Yes, 100%. But otherwise is basically on what he feels is like a righteous quest.
Yeah, like he's trying to violently break free of consumerism.
Yes.
And, capitalist life.
Totally.
But everyone else is stuck in it too.
Exactly. It's a very much like he has to have the realization of like, wait, am I the bad guy? and it is like this really interesting dual narrative where he is really losing his mind completely, but then we're really following also the investigation into all of these crimes which are initially thought to be like entirely unrelated, just like random acts of crime in LA, but the detective who, let me tell you who he's. Oh, he's played by a famous person. Robert Duvall.
Oh,
yeah. Duh.
I couldn't remember any of that part. Like what I remember the big scenes. I remember the neo-Nazi scene. I remember the fast food restaurant scene.
So good. Oh my god.
But I didn't remember at all the dual narrative.
Yeah, it's Robert Duvall plays Sergeant Martin Prendergast.
Nice.
And it's his last day of duty before retirement. So he's like. His wife keeps calling him every 20 minutes to be like, you should just leave. It's your last day. Come home. And he's like, no. I'm kind of busy. I'm kind of like following up on this thing that I have to figure out. But it is this really fascinating kind of examination of like this white male rage specifically that I think a lot of people the rage itself really resonates with a lot of people, but that willingness to abandon any semblance of like kindness or societal convention where he is like his first act after just leaving his car on the street is to go to a convenience store and essentially like assault the guy who owns it by being like, you raised your prices too much. And he doesn't actively attack him, but he does destroy all of the merchandise in the store by being like, how much does this Coca-Cola cost? And he's like $2. And he's like, it used to be 60 cents. And then just like destroys everything on the counter.
Yeah. It's really bratty. It's very, like you're saying, it's the reasoning for the rage is understandable and relatable, but it's without regarding how it's relatable and everyone else is also suffering.
Absolutely. And so the driving narrative of Michael Douglas is that he is just every single person he runs into he's going to cause a problem for, but his goal is to get, like, quote unquote home, which is the house that he used to share with his ex-wife and his daughter, who have a restraining order against him because he clearly has a history of rage. And so it is this really interesting kind of nuanced view of him where he does, like, yeah, he does these acts that are reprehensible, but sometimes, like, I kept feeling so like, oh my God, this movie's crazy, because he does this insane stuff to, like, regular people. But then he has, like, this crazy conversation with a Nazi who owns, like, an Army-Navy surplus store, yeah, who initially is like, oh, you're one of me. But then Michael Douglas loses it on him, too, because he's like, oh, this guy's bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's this really complex, kind of interesting, nuanced, like, view of this rage that I was not expecting. I was really like, oh, God, like, what is the message of this movie? Which is not necessarily what I'm always looking for from a movie, but... Falling Down's really good.
It's
a really good movie.
No, I get it. You're like, how am I supposed to feel about Michael Douglas's character? Right. Because, yeah, the things he's doing are only harmful to, like, he's punching down.
Yes, 100%.
Except for the Nazis.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he's making other people's lives who are just trying to survive also in this very sucky system just harder.
Totally.
But he's also, I mean, he's going full animal in a way that we can all relate to, like, road rage,
right?
You know,
totally.
Where it's like,
you just
are, I can
spit, one day you just snap.
Yeah, I can spit and cuss behind my wheel,
totally,
and I'm keeping it to myself in my little safe car.
Yeah,
but there's always that element within us that we keep under control, and that's why I say bratty, because it's
it is super
allowing
bratty.
Yourself to let go of it at the toll of other people's.
Yeah.
It's bratty.
Ooh, it's so bratty. But yeah, Robert Duvall's character is, like, very humanizing. Like, I think that movie kind of wouldn't work if it was just about Michael Douglas losing his mind. Because you would really, like, grow tired of it after a while. But because, like, largely the plot is actually about, it's both about him trying so hard to get back with his wife and his child who do not want to be with him. And it's largely about Robert Duvall trying to kind of, like, put the pieces together on this, his last day. Oh. It really makes it so poignant and, like, and kind of, and it's, like, in some ways kind of sweet, because you're like, oh, I just want him to succeed.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
Robert Duvall, I mean.
Like, somebody who, you know, you're saying, like, yeah, he's been made fun of. And so somebody who has maintained that patience.
Yes, 100%.
That Michael Douglas does not.
Totally. Like, his coworkers are terrible to him. They're they're, like, just cops and awful.
Yeah.
and he is, like, the most patient man alive.
Yeah.
And he also, like, his wife is portrayed as being, like, incredibly nagging and, like, incredibly, like, she's really nervous, and, like, that's why he stayed out of the field. And so, like, all of these phone calls are very much, like, the kind of thing that would put Michael Douglas fully over the edge.
Yeah.
Like, he's just like, okay, honey, I love you. I'll see you later.
Oh, yeah. You want him to be rewarded for that kind patience.
Exactly. It's, like, a really incredible dichotomy.
I feel like so many of the movies that I find perfect for this theme, heat wave, do take place in cities.
Oh, 100%. Right? The city is the worst place to be.
There's so many. There's several that I didn't get to. Like, I've actually never seen Rear Window.
Oh, perfect.
And I was going to watch that one.
Yeah.
The one that I did watch is Spike Lee's Summer of Sam.
Ooh.
From 1999.
Oh my God, fun. I've never seen it.
So I, like, it's been on my list for a long time and I keep forgetting about it. It is, I remembered it because Criterion Collection is doing a 1999 movie series right now.
Amazing.
Great year for movies.
Perfect.
But also a really aesthetically heavy year for movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
And some movies suffer from that.
Yeah.
And this one did to me.
Bummer.
It takes place in the summer of 1977 in New York City. It's called The Summer of Sam in reference to the Son of Sam serial killer David Berkowitz,
right,
who was, for those of you who don't know, was a serial murderer who was shooting primarily couples in their cars at night, and he believed that his neighbor's dog was telling him to do those things, and, you know, a bunch of Satan stuff. I can't remember the details of what he actually felt was going on, but as it's portrayed in the movie, they do get the dog speaking to him, right, and then the letters he leaves to the cops, whatever. Mm-hmm. This movie is 2 hours and 22 minutes long. It's not in a good way.
Too long.
It is absolutely stacked full of characters because, so our main character, who can be considered our main character, is Vinny, who's played by John Leguizamo.
Love.
Yep. And Vinny and his wife, Diana, who's played by Mira Sorvino.
Love.
he is serially cheating on her. Like, they're a hot, glamorous disco dancing couple, but he's serially cheating on her. And one night when he is cheating on her, he realizes that he was in the car hooking up with this other woman right by a crime scene that was about to happen. So he's descending into paranoia, thinking that the serial killer has seen him and is going to come for him. And it's also, there's a lot going on. So it's about Vinny and all of his other friends who live in a primarily Italian-American neighborhood in the Bronx. One of those friends is his friend Richie, who's played by Adrian Brody, who's going through a punk phase. So he's kind of disappeared from the crew for a while, and he's come back with spiked hair and a fake British accent, and he's obsessed with The Who, which is
incredible,
the least punk band. And so, long story short, I guess, like, eventually the paranoia around these murders continues to heighten until. So, like, Vinny and his friends have a connection to the local mob, and they start creating a list of who they think in their neighborhood might be the Son of Sam killer, because a lot of the murders have happened around their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So they believe that it's a member of their neighborhood, and the paranoia reaches a point where they start to believe that Richie is the Son of Sam because they don't understand punk.
No.
They're like, what the hell?
He's
this
so
guy,
weird now.
He's so weird. He's so freaky.
Yeah.
He's got to be in some Satan stuff.
Classic.
It's got to be Richie.
Gave him a British accent.
Exactly. And, you know, like I said, so 1999 has a lot of movies that have a very 1999 aesthetic, which when you go back to watch them now, either works in their favor or it doesn't.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
When I think about things like The Beach, which actually might be the year 2000, but like
close on the cusp,
where
at
it's
least.
Like so over the top, like extra sweetened that it's kind of queasy.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like this had a lot of intercut scenes of the Son of Sam killer like going crazy in his apartment, and they had like a green filter on them, and it felt very like House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yeah, just, like, oh my God, totally.
Just like, ooh.
Yeah.
And yeah, just far too much movie. I want to say it's a fun story, because I mean, it wasn't not entertaining, right? Like, I think about another 1999 movie, Strange Days.
Yeah, totally.
Which is so, that's where it works in its favor. Like,
right.
That movie is like, maybe not good, but so fun.
Yeah, totally. I still haven't seen it. I have to.
It also makes me feel queasy.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
Also like way too much.
It's so
but
vibey.
Yeah, exactly. But so yeah, this movie is not very good.
It's interesting. It's funny. Every single person I told that we were gonna do Heat Wave too was like, "Oh, are you gonna watch Do the Right Thing?" Which I'm like, we watch movies that we haven't seen before,
exactly.
So I can't watch Do the Right Thing. But it is interesting that Spike Lee has like the quintessential, the best
New York City heat wave movie,
and then trotted out another one a little bit later.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, and you know, this, like so many other movies, has that like love letter to pre-Giuliani New York
totally,
City vibe,
yeah.
Which I always love to see.
Yeah,
I've never
absolutely.
Never lived in New York City, but like those stories are always wonderful as told by New Yorkers.
Yeah.
And so yeah, the heat wave aspect. All right, so it does take place through a long swath of time, like spring into summer.
Oh, wow,
and
yeah.
So there is a section of the movie where it's, and it's because it's supposed to be based on true events.
Right.
Think this was a real heat wave, but the heat rises to 102 degrees in New York Ooh. City, and there's a blackout and a bunch of break-ins and looting. But that's such a short part of the movie.
Right.
And so you're supposed to be getting this feeling that, you know, everyone's already paranoid about these movies. People aren't going out to clubs.
Right.
Women are dying. David Berkowitz targeted brunettes. Right. And so women are dyeing their hair blonde. Whoa. Or wearing blonde wigs.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's scenes where they, Vinny and Deanna go to clubs and they're totally empty because people aren't going out. They're so afraid. So you're supposed to get the vibe that people are already paranoid because of these murders. And then the heat wave kicks in. And it just, from there, it goes completely bananas.
Right.
As it would. But it's little details that I felt were missing, like people's shirts not sticking to their skin.
Yeah,
like
totally.
It just, there seemed to be, I wanted more of that texture that
right.
really makes me believe
not,
that
not
it's
sweaty
hot
enough.
As hell and it feels worse than
yes,
hell.
Like, totally. Yeah. It's hard to maintain that level of like high tension, high sweat, high, like, the frenzy is about to come for 2.5 hours. Like
yeah.
that's the kind of thing that kind of only works when it's packaged in something that's very short and like powerful.
Exactly.
It's kind of hard to stretch that out.
Exactly. It was a little messy. Like it could, cause there was the heightened frenzy of like masculinity, like
mm-hmm.
dudes not dealing with problems
right.
and just doing a bunch of drugs and doing horrible things to each other.
Right.
And then, just kind of nods to like culturally what was going on then, including yeah like looting during blackouts
mm-hmm.
and so it just kind of was very unfocused
right
and it
totally
could have,
chaotic
it could have actually pulled all those things together and told a tighter
mm-hmm.
story that did make me feel hot and sweaty
right totally
but it was a mess. Also like some really bad needle drops again because Adrian Brody's character is really into the Who. There was not one but two like almost full song montages.
Oh yeah, that's a lot. Yeah.
It's fun to see Adrian Brody. His character is kind of fun. Like
mm-hmm.
his character also is a stripper basically at a gay club.
Mm-hmm. That's fun.
Yeah, and a prostitute, and so that's a whole element
yeah,
of it
totally.
Too is like his buddies finding out that he's doing this stuff.
Right. It's like a little homophobic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which again, like that's not a bad part of the telling this story
right.
again, like this, like the chains of masculinity.
Right.
And you know, Adrian Brody as this newfound punk
mm-hmm.
kind of thinking a little bit deeper about the trappings of his social
mm-hmm.
group, like, you know, he gets with this girl Ruby who they're like, oh yeah, she's a big slut, like she's been with everybody.
Right.
why would you want to be with her
yeah.
if you can just hook up with her. Like, you
right, like everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, you don't, why, you know, why would you buy the cow if you can just get the milk?
God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I like her.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
like,
so
I want to date her.
He's thinking a little more. He's
yeah.
thinking a little more about himself as he relates to others around
mm-hmm.
him. And that's also freaking them out.
Right.
Anthony LaPaglia plays a detective who's investigating
mm-hmm.
the murders. But he's like kind of in some scenes.
Yeah.
It was very dizzying.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. Yeah. I'm interested in watching it, but it sounds like maybe it would have benefited from a tighter edit.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Massively. I mean, there was other things that needed like a tighter script too.
Right. Totally.
Because what an interesting time to set
yeah,
a movie.
Yeah, totally.
Because that was a real horrifying
yeah,
summer.
Absolutely.
Including
and like,
it being so hot.
And the story of people kind of entering like a frenzied state in a panic is always so fascinating. You know, refer back to our episode about mass hysteria that
yes.
we did a couple of years ago.
Yes.
But it's like that is, I mean, I think that's part of what's interesting about the heat wave theme. And like, we've watched lots of movies and talked about lots of movies in the past that involve heat as like a strong element. But it really does make people totally lose their minds. Like,
it does.
Like when you're, I mean, I felt that way earlier today when I was like, it's so hot. Why do I feel extra crazy?
Oh, I mean,
like, truly, you can't think straight.
As mentioned at the top of the show, Jenny and I really relate to each other on many ways in many aspects of our friendship. But one of the big ones is we both absolutely lose our marbles in the heat.
I can't do it. Just can't do it.
I cry. I get really rude. It's
yeah,
nuts.
Just want to lie on the floor.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And you know, it had also, thinking about mass hysteria
mm-hmm.
And wonderful stories about New York City, you know, it had a big sense of community, right?
Yeah,
like
totally
within this Italian American Bronx neighborhood, you know, there's a queer character who's definitely like a trans woman, but for the time, like, that's not really understood.
Yeah, totally.
And they, these boys, like, really make fun of this person, but also this is a member of their community that they grew up with, so they also like go after the person who beat her up, you know?
Like, there's like, still affection for her and
because there's a community, like a little community pride, and that also leads to then this kind of like mob vigilantism when they feel like David Berkowitz is in their neighborhood. They're like, give all the kids baseball bats and like, you know, get up to some very dangerous, misguided stuff because they understandably are like, this is our community. We want to protect our community, but end up, of course, like assaulting harmless people.
Yeah, it's so hard.
So there is that kind of fun to watch and realistic frenzied overly sweaty masculine overcompensation but so that's The Summer of Sam.
That's really
from 1999. It is streaming on Paramount Plus, and I think it is worth a watch. I don't think it's good, but it is worth a watch, and I think most people who saw it when it came out did think of it as a good movie. But of course, like we said, when you go back and watch these movies and how they age, like, that was such a heavy aesthetic time that they don't necessarily age very well.
It's hard when that's the case.
Yeah.
It sounds like it might be an interesting companion piece to, like, Cruising. Like, there's something about what you're describing there, I'm like, which has, like, really good, like, sweaty club scenes too, but also has that kind of, like, hysteria and just... Obviously, very different subject matter, but like, I mean, also murders.
I absolutely thought about Cruising. Yeah, I absolutely thought about Cruising, which is also, as we discussed when we watched it, maybe not a great movie, but also a great movie.
Like a fascinating movie. Like, I think there's so many things about it that are really interesting that make it like worth watching and worth talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. The summertime is so hard.
It's so hard. It's Cruising. Definitely a better movie
than Summer of Sam.
Than Summer of Sam. But yeah, it's too bad. Like, I was still entertained because it was so long and meandering. I felt like I was going crazy in the heat.
Yeah, totally.
Even though they didn't really show me people being like, the heat wave feeling wasn't there enough for me, or I wasn't shown to me well enough, but it did make me feel crazy.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was just actually looking up whether John Leguizamo is Italian, because he's always playing Italian.
I know. That's so funny you say that. I thought about that as well.
Oh, Luigi Mario is here again.
Wonderful to see Mara Sorvino as always.
Love her.
As always.
Yeah. Don't see her enough, frankly. I do love John Leguizamo. That's why I was
I love him so much.
Another Italian role for our good friend John.
Yeah.
I love him.
Yeah. Love him so much.
That is kind of, it was both in both directions, frankly, and like all of history of cinema, that Italians play Latinos and Latinos play Italians.
Yep, exactly.
Beautiful.
It's funny. I'm thinking about just seeing lovely Mira Sorvino too, who plays Vinny, John Leguizamo's wife, and it does, because it's so long and there are so many characters that you spend time with, it almost feels like this epic, and there's so much to do with their relationship. Like, he is a serial cheater, and she feels like she can't please him because he feels like he can't do any of the dirty stuff with his wife, you know, BJs and stuff. So he's like, that's not what you do with wives.
Yeah, I gotta get this elsewhere.
You can't do that with wives. But so she's so confused because she wants to please him, but every time they try to like get extra sexy, he can't handle it because he's like, we're not supposed to be doing this. I feel like I'm sinning in God's eyes. And he gets really obsessed with what God's thinking about him, because he feels like he dodged a bullet by not getting murdered by David Berkowitz. There's like a whole scene where they end up going to like a swingers like sex club accidentally, and like get into a huge fight, and eventually she does see the way and break up with him.
Amazing.
And then he goes nuts. And
yeah.
They beat up Richie at the end. But he makes it. He doesn't die.
That's good. All right. Well, that's, you know, a little lightness at the end.
Richie's parents are my favorite characters in it because they're like,
he's just going through a fight.
It's his mom and his new stepdad, and they're like really in love. And they're like kind of like, he's like a goofy, funny looking guy who I guess was like an Italian lounge singer.
Cute.
And like they're wearing lingerie around the house. And they're like, Richie, you have to move into the garage because we need privacy.
We need privacy. We just got married. Oh my God, that's so cute.
They're really, yeah. Anyways.
All right. I watched one other movie.
Yes.
Which I've been meaning to watch for years. And I was really glad to be able to knock it off my list last night. It was a really great movie. I watched Eve's Bayou.
Oh.
Which I've always wanted to see. It's from 1997. We went strict 90s this week, which I do love for us.
I mean, they were a hot time.
incredibly hot.
Sweaty time.
So sweaty. Eve's Bayou is from 1997. It was directed by Casey Lemons, who is a black woman director, which you didn't see very much back then, and you still don't see very much now.
I might be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure she also had an acting career, including playing Clarice Starling's best friend in Silence of the Lambs.
You're absolutely correct. Yeah, she's acted in more movies than she's directed. She has sadly not directed that many movies, I imagine, because of the industry not being very friendly to black women.
Yes.
But her debut film is Eve's Bayou, and it's really incredible. Like, specifically, the direction is really incredible. Mm-hmm. It's a really beautifully made movie that is about a family living in Louisiana in, like, the 60s, I think it's kind of meant to be. And it primarily follows a little girl who's 10 years old named Eve, who is named after the kind of opening scene of the film is Eve narrating and talking about how this area where she and her family live was settled early by a woman who was formerly enslaved who like helped a white man, and then they married each other and they had 17 kids, and she's named after him or after her rather. And so that's where she gets her name, Eve. Mm-hmm. And the area is called Eve's Bayou. And it's about this summer in her life where she's 10 years old and she like basically learns a bunch of really dark secrets in her family. Ooh. And kind of all of these cascading events happen as a result of that. And it's kind of funny because it's the kind of movie that they don't make anymore. Mm. Like we talk about all the time, like the movie Mermaids. Like it's this really specific family drama that has a lot of darkness to it, but is also very sweet and very funny and has like just a true like human center to it. It's
what
so
I crave. That movie's also been on my list for a long time because I think in the past it was described to me as kind of like an American Gothic.
Yes, it's incredibly gothic. It's like the entire thing takes place like in or around the house that they grew up in. Mm-hmm. The Eve is played by Journey Smollett, who is in a bunch of stuff now. Like I saw her name and I was like, oh, I know who that is. But the thing that I know her from is from the movie Birds of Prey with the Harley Quinn movie.
Oh yeah.
That I think is really good. I think it has a lot of haters, but I actually genuinely think it's a great movie. But she's also in a bunch of TV shows. You'd recognize her if you saw her.
Yeah.
She's in Friday Night Lights. I feel like that's probably what you'd know her from. Yes. But she's like, in Lovecraft Country is the other big one.
Okay.
But she's a little girl in this movie, and she's so cute. She has like the cutest little face. She has like big dimples, like a big smile. And it's her and her older sister and her little brother, and her mother is played by Lynn Whitfield, who is like one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my life. And her father is played by Samuel L. Jackson, who is doing an incredible job of acting in this one.
Yes.
And it's like, it's just really, it's really interesting because it has this melodrama to it that I think could make it feel kind of cheap, but the story itself has so much depth to it, and it's dealing a lot with coming of age and kind of memory and how we kind of recontextualize things when we think about them later in life in this way that's incredibly like thoughtful and nuanced. And it's a really beautiful movie.
Well, that's like a subject I do truly love in a movie is also serious life events seen through child's eyes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then it's another step when the movie revisits that character when they're older.
Totally.
And like how
yeah.
Because things are interpreted so differently, but on a just as important emotional level
totally.
By children.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really love that kind of movie.
Yeah, and I think you would really love You Spy.
How do those movies really walk that line so well, like you're saying, where there's so much melodrama, but it's so, the script is so good and it's so well acted
yeah.
That it doesn't feel corny.
Right, totally.
I feel like, those movies like Mermaids or like yeah. Mystic Pizza.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Walk that line so well.
Yeah.
I mean, so much dramatic stuff happens
totally.
In them. It's
yeah.
over the top that it can, like, this is 1 month in the right. the life of some Connecticut girl's summers.
Right. Like, what a crazy summer.
Yeah, exactly. And but
sometimes that's just the way it goes.
I believe it.
If the story is told in the right way, it can really work. And
yeah.
so this movie, my one gripe with it, which is my fault because I just didn't know. I knew that it was about like a summer in a girl's life, but it doesn't quite have like the sweat and the heat in
yeah.
the same way. But it is really about people kind of like losing it.
Yeah.
So that in that way, it does really fit
yeah.
the heat wave theme. But so we start at kind of the beginning of the summer when Eve is at a party that her parents are throwing at their house, which is like a big, beautiful house right on the bayou. Like her Samuel L. Jackson, her father is a doctor and they're like clearly like upper middle class to wealthy. Like they have like a really beautiful like southern home that's like surrounded by trees with Spanish moss.
Ugh,
like it's
Louisiana.
Gorgeous. Yeah, and it's the 60s, so they're all wearing like beautiful dresses. And so she is at a party and she gets kind of bored during the party and she goes out to the carriage house and falls asleep. And when she wakes up, she sees her father sleeping with another woman. But because she's 10, she doesn't really understand what's happening. She just knows that like he's kissing somebody and they're doing something that she's like not supposed to be seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And so she like he sees her and he's and like they stop obviously because mm-hmm. they're like, oh God, what's going on?
Yeah.
And he kind of has like a little chat with her that's like, don't worry about this. Like
yeah.
it's all gonna be fine. Like I love your mother. She's the most beautiful woman I've ever seen, which is true. She's stunning. Which is like it is incredible that everyone is like, your mom's so beautiful. And then they show her and I'm like, she is so
yeah, she's
beautiful.
So beautiful.
And so she, you know, they like he tries to kind of like brush it under the rug. And then but then when she goes to bed later that night, she starts crying and her older sister, who's 13, is like, what happened to you? And when Eve tries to tell her about what she saw, her older sister, whose name is Cicely, is like, that's not what you saw. And then there's like this incredible sequence where she puts her arm around Eve and like the scene replays.
Mm.
And it's like, no, you saw them. Like daddy told her a joke and she laughed and fell into him and they like smiled and that start and they like knocked something over and that woke you up. Like that's
yeah.
what you saw. So it's like the active rewriting of
wow.
the memory. And it's done in like such a beautifully like directed way
mm.
where you like you watch the literal rewriting of the memory. It's
oh.
like it's so fascinating. And then so from there it's just kind of like the fallout of her kind of understanding this other part of her father where like he is a womanizer. Like he's
yeah.
really well respected in the community because he's like an incredible doctor and like everyone really likes him, but it turns out he is like staying out late and like sleeping with women all the time.
Yeah.
And so the other kind of main character in this movie is her aunt, who, I'm trying to remember what her name is a psychic counselor is her
yes.
title, where
yes.
she has people come to her house and she like holds their hands and then like has a vision and then tells them what to do, basically. You know, like a woman comes and is like, where is, I haven't seen my son in 2 months. Where is he? And she like literally has a vision of him like in Detroit.
Whoa.
And she's like, oh, like he's in Detroit.
Wow.
The actress is Debbie Morgan and her aunt is Aunt Moselle. That's her name.
Yes.
But so it's like this other, it's so fun because it has this like really fun, like big family dynamic where they're all like interconnected. And so
I mean, that's like the neighborhood story where it's
I
like,
I
want to see a story with tons of characters.
Totally.
Summer of Sam didn't do it well, but
right.
it's like, I love whether it's a big family or a whole neighborhood.
Totally.
I feel
like the whole interconnected, like it just, it gives so much texture to the world.
It does.
But so she spends a lot of time with her aunt, who is a psychic. And I guess like everyone in the family is kind of like, yeah, she's just a little crazy. But
yeah.
like Eve definitely believes that she's psychic. And because we're watching this through her perspective, we see her, like we see Aunt Moselle's visions also.
Yeah.
And so there's like the rest, the movie kind of continues a pace in this way where Moselle has been married three times and all of her husbands have been killed, like in dramatic ways. And so she feels like she's cursed. So like there's that, like the family curse is a part of it too.
Oh,
it's so,
so much good stuff.
It's so good. It's like, it's so sweet. And that like really adds to the kind of gothic energy. But so Moselle has a vision one day of like a child falling as a train is running, as a train is going by. And like it imagines basically that like a kid is going to get hit by a train. So Eve's mother believes her and is like, cool, the kids are all staying in the house all summer. Yeah. No one is leaving. Oh, no. And so Eve and her older sister and her little brother are all trapped in the house.
Oh, no.
Basically. Until and because of that, like they're all kind of losing their minds.
Yeah.
And so I was like, what is the order of this? I just watched it last night, so I'm still kind of digesting it.
Yeah, of course.
There is one night where Eve's older sister, Cicely, sneaks out to go see their dad. And, like, goes to his office, kind of, like, I think probably also catches him sleeping with a woman and then comes home later that night. And, like, there's, like, a questionable incident between her and Samuel L. Jackson, their father, mm-hmm. that basically causes her to, like, become catatonic and not speak to anyone. Mm. And so, like, the mother sends her away. And so, like, there's just, like, all of this, like, really complicated family stuff going on. And Eve is questioning everything. Like, yeah. She's like, I don't know what's happening. Yeah. I don't know who to trust. Like, she wants to believe her older sister. So she decides to essentially put a curse on her father and hope, in hopes that he will die, because she believes that he has done something. She believes that he's assaulted her older sister. And so she goes to visit this, like, local woman who her aunt is like, she's a voodoo witch, don't listen to her.
Yeah.
But she goes to see her anyway and asks her to put a curse on her father. I'm like, I don't want to tell you the whole plot of Eve's Value. I feel like I'm really like getting caught up in the magic. The tale is seducing me. But anyway, it all kind of like coalesces in like this, like there's a series of like really complicated melodramatic events that all happen in the middle of the summer where like Eve is clearly, like, it's kind of like the classic loss of innocence where like, honestly, she's an incredible actor for like, she's like 9 or 10 in this movie. And at the very beginning, she seems incredibly childlike. And by the end, she does feel like a kid who's really gone through something.
Yeah.
So it is like, I think that's part of what really sells it, is that like her energy is so, it changes so much over just the course of this summer. And like, obviously the course of like the filming of this movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just such a beautiful, like really complex story about how like memory and also how we experience things isn't necessarily always the reality of it.
Yeah. And the emotional memory is what's going to stay rather than the like the image that stays.
Totally.
In your mind.
And like the re-reckoning of it later when you kind of have more information.
Yeah.
But it's so beautiful, and like the costumes are incredible. The cinematography is like so gorgeous because it's all like on this incredible bayou.
I mean, Louisiana is beautiful, and it's also so muggy.
So muggy. I know that is kind of my one complaint, which is not obviously like kind of was not the purpose of this film, so it didn't really need to be a part of it. But for our purposes as the heat wave watchers, I was like, no one looks very sweaty, and often people are wearing long sleeves like in the summertime, and I'm like, I know you're hot.
Same thing with summer. Sam, I'm like, y'all are wearing pants and what looks like polyester, because it's 1977.
Right. Like there's a couple scenes where Eve's mom and her aunt are both wearing like beautiful dresses that do have like short sleeves, and they both look like a little bit flushed because they're so beautiful.
Yeah.
But then like Eve is often wearing like a little cardigan over her t-shirt, and I'm like, it's too hot for that. You do not need to be wearing a cardigan right now. Like I would be dead.
I've been to New Orleans in the summer.
It's like absolutely not. It's kind of like the magic, the like mysticism of the bayou. It's like it does like all of that kind of plays into this like this kind of hazy, like feverish summer where they're all kind of, everyone's losing their minds inside of the house, especially when the kids are trapped in there, like and then just also this uncovering of all of this like complex family history and like reckoning with like who you believe your father to be and who he really is, but also like, is that information correct. Like, there's so much.
And it being told through a child's perspective adds to that haziness.
Yeah, absolutely.
your narrator is not unreliable, but processing things differently than an adult.
Totally. Yeah. And, like, doesn't have all of the information or, like, maturity of an adult. Yeah.
It is one of my favorite sub genres, as we've talked about, where, like, kind of, like, it often ends up being dark fantasy movies, yeah, like Pan's Labyrinth or something, mm-hmm, but, like, children dealing with very, very serious adult situations.
Totally.
And seeing it through their perspective and often dealing with it in, like, through imagination and
totally
fantasy. I've talked about that Australian movie that I love, Celia.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen that show.
Which is similar because, like, you know, obviously Pan's Labyrinth really goes full fantasy. But Celia is, like, a young, daydreamy child. I think it is taking place maybe in the 50s in Australia, mm-hmm, but her parents are communists and, like, have to be secretive about, mm-hmm, it. And, like, so the neighbors are starting to find out, and her family's being persecuted for being communists. And so that's what she's dealing with.
Right.
But, like, she doesn't totally understand it, of course, because it's,
right,
also political.
Yeah, totally.
And, yeah, dealing with it in this, like, they're also, like, a white family in Australia. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, like, imaginings about the land out there,
right,
and, like,
totally,
the creatures, and
right,
it's
yeah,
so
gotta watch that. Yeah. But yeah, Eve's Bayou, really beautiful. Like, one of those movies that is, like, kind of a classic of cinema. At the, like, obviously it's from the 90s, so, like, what is a classic? But that I've been meaning to watch for years, and I'm really, yeah, glad I did. It was, like, very beautifully made. Like, sometimes the score is a little overwrought, but I feel like that really adds to the melodrama of it, so it didn't,
right,
bother me.
Right?
I was like, this is all, you're, like, you're just plunging me into the, like, melodramatic Southern Gothic vibe that I just am, I'm loving it.
Even the movies that don't walk that line that well from that time, like, kind of overdo it, mm-hmm, like Fried Green Tomatoes.
Totally.
I still love.
Yeah, of course. It's, like, it just really hits a chord. I think especially, like, watching it as an adult, I think really hit. But I think if I saw that as a kid, I'd be like, this is the best movie I've ever seen. You know,
yeah,
it's like one of those,
yeah,
ones, like a movie that just feels really serious when you're a kid.
Yeah, and
it's,
you're like, I watch adult,
whoa,
movies.
Exactly.
I watch movies, yeah, for grown-ups.
It's like, this is so crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's streaming for free on Amazon Prime if you have,
yes,
that. If that's something that's available to you.
Amazing.
It's also in the Criterion collection, so I imagine it's on Criterion.
I forget that also. What is her name again?
Journey Small, or
no,
the
director,
Casey
Lemons.
Well,
she plays also
Casey Lemons. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, she plays Virginia Madsen's best friend.
Yes,
in Candyman.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
Yep.
She's,
yep,
so good.
She's.
I wish she would make more movies. I'd like,
I know,
to see some more.
Wow. We have 3 minutes left. Should we talk about A Quiet Place Part One really quick?
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, we don't have to. It's just.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, we can do it. I liked it. You didn't. That's the review.
Done.
I like,
yeah,
the cat. My working theory on A Quiet Place Day One is that if you've ever owned a cat, the toxoplasmosis makes you like it.
Yes. What's that? What is that word you just used?
That's like it's like a toxoplasmosis is like a disease that you can be exposed to when you own a cat.
Oh, gross.
Yeah, don't worry about it. You don't need to think about it.
What does it do?
I mean, probably actually bad stuff, but I always understand it as like making.
Now I love cats.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah,
I don't think everybody actually has it if you have a cat, but it's just like a fun joke.
I mean, they threw the cat in there because it's not a good movie, and they needed it to be better.
I think it's,
so they.
I liked it better than the first two. Maybe controversial opinion. I don't know. Yeah. I did.
I'll say with the little bit of time we have left, I'll say that at the very least, I just really wanted it to be only day one.
Yeah.
You know?
They didn't do that.
No.
They did not abide by the title.
No. It was,
yeah,
not that fun because, no, of that. I'm like, just make it the crazy day
I
one.
Know. I mean, that would be a more interesting movie, but they have to go the emotional route every time.
It has that dark-eyed boy from Stranger Things starring in it.
That is.
Yeah, he's,
yeah,
like the metalhead.
Yeah.
Whatever terrible new season.
God.
And I thought he was cute with like the long hair. My Instagram, like I looked at like one reel, one like fan reel, then it was all these like kind of creepy, like obsessed
fan
like,
cams.
Yeah, videos about his character and Stranger Things, and I'm like,
Amanda, also, those are called fan cams. Sorry,
it was a bunch of fan those cams. Of that character, the metalhead guy from Stranger Things. We went to see a drive-in and we saw another. Like I thought that movie was bad, and then we stayed for the second one, which was
The Exorcism.
The Exorcism starring Russell Crowe, which
so was bad,
so bad.
One of the worst movies I've seen in a long time.
Exactly.
Yeah.